It's live.
Okay. It's for the supports. We're going to talk about the elections.
And the
2022 elections.
Which has sapped so much energy.
Oh, God. Like, to be honest, like, we always plan to do to record something on the elections, obviously, you know, but the results were just a bit, you know, so shocking. I don't know, like, what's your reaction? Because it's emotional. Everyone is emotional about it. Whether, but yeah, what was your first reaction about the
elections? Results?
Yeah, the results.
When the results came in, I said, yeah, I think this fits with the surveys. Yeah. So I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I'm looking for that would have given Len Robredo a higher or more votes didn't appear.
Mm-hmm.
So
if things like the house to house?
Not that. Those were done too late. Mm-hmm. Those were done too late.
Mm.
The lack of a unified opposition would mm-hmm. be one. Talagang hindi sila makakuha ng mataas na boto doon. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, the lack of support from, and explicit support from Duterte, even if Duterte is already attacking BBM multiple times.
Right.
The absence of an explicit endorsement
didn't
pursue the turn. Kasi meron naman nakikilala ng DDS na si Lenny ang iboboto tsaka si Sara. So the Lenny Sara
The Rosa.
Didn't fly.
Mm-hmm. So, sadly.
Ikaw, what were your immediate
you know, it's weird, you know. I mean, in Twitter there are these spaces wherein they're getting news about precincts piece by piece. And so some that are where Lenny was leading, she was leading in the OFW votes in Australia. Mm. She was leading in some, you know, of course, Naga, but that's to be expected. Iloilo, again, to be expected. Of course, Ayala Alabang, that's to be expected. Of course, the typical, like, people you'd expect, you know, mostly in gentrified and allied regions. And then all of a sudden, at 8 o'clock, boom, it's like it was, I think, 900,000 to 400,000. Yeah, Bongbong had 900,000 votes, while Lenny had 400,000 votes, like already 2-1. And then all of a sudden, next update, boom. It's again almost 2-1. So it's like overwhelming. Now, I think because before the results, there were already some news reports about the malfunctioning voters' machines, about some people being in line for hours, about some people still voting or still have not voted. They're still in line and they were asking people to extend the voting hours. Mm. So, of course, it's like this is not a good sign. You know, this could be a symbol of foul play. Then all of a sudden we are waiting for the parallel counts, the canvassing, and then the parallel counts of the PPCRV or the Parish Pastoral Council of Responsible Voting, a lot of volunteer groups. And it's the results haven't changed, you know?
Yeah. So PPCRV said that it's relatively coherent.
So, but first of all, like, maybe we can talk about like how the voting has gone, you know, because there are a lot of areas wherein there's literally violence going on, you know. So it's enough to make you ask questions like, are these legitimate numbers with regards to like these specific items, you know, or these occurrences of abnormalities? I mean, of course, long lines have been there since time immemorial, but I don't know, is this any different? Like, is this a sign of foul play?
Regardless of whether there's foul play or not, you people legitimize this entire thing. Because the media had done its job. It mm-hmm. showed the possibility of voter fraud.
Mm-hmm.
It showed it months, a year ago, when appointments were made regarding Comelec. Mm. The media had done its job. And people know that there could be electoral violence. Yet you people voted. Uh-huh. So you legitimize the damn thing. Whether there's foul play or not, that's your decision to vote.
Mm-hmm.
But this, you know, I would entertain the question of whether it's legitimate or not if voter turnout actually fell.
Uh-huh.
That's the only moment that you can question the entire system.
Mm.
If voter turnout fell to 40%, but it didn't.
Right.
You people, despite of all the information roaming around on the possibility of cheating, you people voted. So, yes.
Well, kicking people while they're down won't exactly get people to your side. So be careful about that.
No, I'm not kicking them down and just letting them know that you legitimize the system. Mm-hmm. That's the point of voting. It would not be taught to you during voter's ed.
Mm. So, well, before we move on to that, maybe we can get this out of your system, well, at least out of your system before we study this, you know. What would you have had people do with, like, ideally? What would you have people do?
Well, don't vote and demand higher standards from both the COMELEC and from the candidates. But then again, like Filipinos, but then again, this demand is...
What higher standards?
Better candidates, better management of the entire process. But then again, it's like demanding to a wall. This government will not budge.
Right, so... better system how? Lay it out right now.
Better systems. Basically, the...
Better systems...
The appointments for COMELEC, the one handling logistics, should have been someone else. The companies handling the machines could have been someone else, simply because the machines have proven to be faulty.
Who?
Whoever else.
What's wrong with the ones now?
Whoever can provide a less faulty set of machines. I don't know. I'm not the expert on elections here.
Right.
You're asking the wrong person regarding electoral reform. I'm just saying that there needs to be a demand for electoral reform.
So you're not an expert in electoral reform, and yet you're telling people now...
I'm looking at the essence of voting. You asked me about the question of legitimacy.
Yeah.
And that is the question of legitimacy. What's the purpose of voting? You vote not only for specific individuals, but you're also voting for the system.
So at the very least, for example, you don't vote until and what I'm sensing also is, if it's someone else, how would you ensure that someone else would be chosen? Because these appointments are, of course, handled by, if I'm not mistaken, the executive branch or the president, right?
We can't. As I've said, it's like asking a wall to move. But the thing
we're going to have to move to steps if it is going to be... Let's try and identify some steps. Because
first and foremost, I could not, because my argument is not about electoral reform. I'm just saying that there's a need for it. If we want to know the details of electoral reform, let's get Dr. Cleo here. What I'm saying is, everyone who voted does not have any moral high ground to complain about the results. Simply because they have approved by voting. Despite knowing that there's a possibility for fraud. If less than the majority voted, let's say only 40% voted, then the 60% would have all the right to declare that the results and the system itself is illegitimate. So that addresses your question on legitimacy. Now, I would no longer speak on reform because I'm not an expert on it. But even if I'm not an expert, I know that there's a demand and there should be a demand for reform. Is your question satisfied?
That depends. Are you satisfied with this point on, you know, blaming the voters?
Yeah, I am, because I would pay for this damn thing anyway.
You would pay?
Via taxes.
Mm-hmm.
I would keep on paying my taxes, even if I didn't choose the system.
Okay.
Anyway, let's move on. What else? Yeah, I was asking about your response to the results. You only answered about the Twitter spaces. What about you? How did you respond to it?
How do I respond to it? That is, of course, I think everyone has to owe Pulse Asia an apology after all these slanderous statements towards Pulse Asia. And all the other, well, not all surveys, you know, I mean, some are more legitimate than others, but at least we know Pulse Asia is still sound. But it is, of course, well, we all hope for a miracle, but the data showed it's almost 1-to-1, really. Like, Bongo Marcos did get this more than 50%, more than any other candidate in history. You know, the biggest lead in history is nowhere near the the votes they had, it was almost even, you know, with between BB Bongo Marcos and Lenny. So it was a surprise. I mean, we expected him to win, but not by that larger margin. So that's what some people would also say, that maybe there is some foul play. But even with the foul play, it looks like the situation, like that results are the results. So of course, a lot of people in the circle started breaking down. You know, even my own relatives, my own grandmother, who marched during EDSA, also had a bit of had to cope with a bit. I mean, she's a bit better now, but it still wasn't pleasant. I'm sure a lot of people, other people's grandmothers and grandfathers who lived through martial law, did not find it pleasant. So, yeah. Then again, the argument could be said that, yung mga ipang lolo at lola naman, di ba nagustuhan ng martial law, di ba? Parang tahimik mo ng buhay nun. So, it's a battle of lolos and lolas. Hindi na panitinawalaan, di ba?
As I've lolo said, nito, lolo you need to let the lolos and lolas speak with each other instead of, you know, pitting them against one another. You need to, you know, let them speak.
Would they speak to each other? That would be interesting.
I think
Would they be willing to be in the same room?
Well, civic duty may make them be willing.
Is it the results of their arguments, or just us see them resolving it? You know, like what is to be gained from this? Letting them speak.
What is to be gained by letting them speak? Well, those from the other camp would know the lolos and lolas of the other.
Right.
That's the first step towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can probably ask them what should be done. You know,
right. I suppose it leads to the next question. Like, how much of this was actually due to, say, for example, disinformation, historical revisionism, and the like? Because everyone is talking about it, but how much of it has to do with this results?
Historical distortion, though, not revisionism. So, yeah, it's
distortions, right?
See, one of our friends on Twitter that I had to clarify with, because historical revisionism is technically
normal.
It's normal. When there's new facts coming in,
mm-hmm.
you revise the narrative based on those facts. Mm-hmm. But historical distortion is something else. So, how much of it is based on historical distortion and disinformation? You know, one thing that's regarding the data that I have, leader-centric tendencies actually match the results of pulsation of this election.
Mm-hmm. Matched how?
50%.
50%
of the respondents would surrender the public policy process to a leader and would give absolute power to anyone they consider as morally upright. So the question, how much of it is due to misinformation and historical distortion? I think a lot of it, maybe. I cannot give you a number, but the impacts of those activities only resonated because of the political values already in place. So I think what happened was you have, you know, a group of people burying conspiracy theories in their head, orally passed from one generation to another.
Right.
Orally passed from one group to another. And then social media happened, YouTube happened. And then they started seeing those conspiracy theories being projected back to them by supposed experts who elaborated on it and who added a little bit of flair, and you know, historical distortions, information would come in. But I think those things will not resonate if the values are not leaning to those directions. Those conspiracy theories are, you know, don't have any root to begin with. So, ano lang, I think the explicit campaigns on misinformation and distortion only amplified what already exists. Ikaw, ano bang diagnosis mo dito sa misinformation issue na to?
I think we have the same diagnosis I've tried to say this before, that there are a lot of people try to make fake news, but only a certain fake news resonates because it hits the or appeals to the leader-centric values that you mentioned. So it's not just the sheer saturation and the and the sheer machinery of it. That is, of course, a given, you know. But again, they can produce hundreds of contents, articles, all they want. If it doesn't hit their hit the value of leader centrism, then you know it's not going to work. But let's discuss, of course, why Bongo Marcos won, because you can argue that all campaigns appeal to the leader, because in the absence of functioning political parties, of solid platform-based political parties, they would rely on judging the character of individual politicians. So since Bongo Marcos won, 2-1, obviously, from Lenny Robredo, technically, of course, you can see that dynamics with Lenny as well. Mm. But why did Marcos win and Lenny did not?
This is where our illiberalism would come in to an extent. Mm-hmm. Mm. And the thing is, Lenny's the leader centrism underlying Lenny is combined with a bit of citizen centric. Mm-hmm. We could not deny that. With regards to leader centrism, I think Marcos's campaign is far more aggressively leader centric, while Lenny's campaign is a curious hybrid, which can provide, you know, it can provide future basis for future campaigns that may be successful, but it's more of a hybrid of between leader centrism and, of course, more citizen centric approach to democracy. So yung house to house, even if it's late, be there along with the, you know, the grand rallies, the projection of a grassroots movement. So, halo. So, part of my data also points to the possibility of a hybrid. So, who knows? Maybe this can be a prototype for future oppositions.
Well, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's weird that both, in a way, you can observe trolls in both sides, you know, or all camps actually had their own fair share of trolls. But why do you think it's only Lenny that suffered the consequences of having quote-unquote trolls, while Bongo Marcos clearly, you know, a lot of people can point a lot of trolls located for the Marcos Duterte UNI team, and yet they're the ones winning, you know? Why is that? That's the weird thing about it. Do you have any idea about that?
I think it's also partially based on how Marcos handled criticism for this entire campaign period, which is he either ignored it or diverted it. He did a good job of avoiding direct confrontation with criticisms, and even not attending debates would be there. Well, most of the debates, he only attended the SMNIs. But for Lenny's case, they failed to control their more aggressive members. That would be one. And on the other, I feel bad for the Lenny campaign, because if this if Lenny's campaign happened in 2028, after Filipinos have satisfied or fulfilled their fantasies on the Marcos return, she would have had a better chance. Because again, Marcos served as a relatively blank slate that people can project their fantasies on.
Yeah. Even though he didn't say it, people say, oh, but it means centralization, unity, nationalism, the Philippines can be great. Even though he didn't really say those things. You know.
Yeah, they can project whatever fantasies they have. Lenny, on the other hand, it's not as much.
Right.
It's not as much. You cannot project as much on Lenny. But for Marcos, you can project anything you want. Go ahead.
I mean, that's the weird thing about, you know, Lenny. Lenny is not, well, with, I think you're, the reason why she can't that you can't project on Lenny is Lenny is very clear on what she's about. And she's about, you know, providing welfare, providing aid. It's just, it's a very mother state kind of discourse, which is left of center, not necessarily, you know, far left or communist, you know, but somewhat socialist, moderately socialist. And I think, with the kinds of spaces we've been to, you know, a lot of Bongo Marcos and Sara Duterte supporters kind of identify themselves as conservative/libertarian. And because Bongo Marcos is the opposite of Lenny, perhaps, and they don't like that moderate socialism or any form of socialism at all, they pin their hopes on Marcos. Is that an example of like,
yeah, projecting?
What do you think about that? Projecting, yeah.
Yeah. You know, we don't know if Marcos is actually like that. But people can project shit on him.
I mean, how can a libertarian
support
Marcos when his father is known for being an authoritarian, about being disciplined, you know, about having curfews, about having, you know, that's the weird thing, you know, the Marcos campaign. It's both, anak siya ng senior, but also hindi naman siya yung ano ginawa noon, di ba? Like, in other words, he is like his father except for his sins. You know, he doesn't inherit the sins. That's the great excuse. Yeah.
Yun na yung mga informal attitudes ko dito, mga kapitbahay ko, Jesus Mason. Yun ang una ko narinig. Ihiwalay daw yung tatay sa anak. Except, pero anak ng tatay pa rin, ihiwalay lang yung anak. And they're discussing the sins. So you're right. You're absolutely right. They can excuse by doing that, by separating the son from the father in relation to sins, but with relation to capabilities, they would conflate one with the other. So again, it's a closed system. You really cannot argue against that. Yes, bloody can't. Right. Pero again, regarding libertarian supporting dictators, I mean, come on, Pinochet, Chile supported by neoliberals. It's a bloody dictator. So it's not surprising.
Right.
Ano lang, it's... Bleh. We are reaching a certain ideological maturation and this is what we have.
We got to write about that, by the way.
The what?
Maturation. Ideological maturation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I think we said this before, but I'm not sure on the podcast. But in terms of like the candidates right now, it's actually quite clear where they stand. I mean, we've mentioned Marcos is... he's not explicitly authoritarian, but he harkens to an authoritarian right-wing time. At the same time, libertarians can project him. Lenny has the progressives, liberals, left of center, even the Makabayan bloc. But then you have Isko Moreno, who is a centrist, and you may argue pragmatist, and we can talk about that a bit later. Yeah. And then you have Manny Pacquiao, who is socially conservative, but also like anti-corruption. So... you call that right of center, I suppose. And then you have Ping Lacson, who is, in a way, you can call him a...
Solid right.
A solid right, okay. More or less a former policeman, disciplinarian, someone with experience.
Yeah.
So, with, of course, his, conservative mate. Yeah. Tito Soto.
Yeah.
And you have Calliodi, who's
clear left.
He was a clear left. Yeah. So there, you can clearly identify them ideologically. So, what do you say about that?
Again, most of them are in the center. So again, I reiterate the need to calibrate our ideological compass beyond left and right. But we're using the left and right for heuristic purposes. Pero yeah, you have Calio, this clear socialist. You have Ping and. Ping and Soto as clear rule of law conservatives. Then you have Manny Pacquiao, who is relatively socialist. Not relatively, but pro-poor.
Right.
Pro-poor conservative naman.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what can I say about them taking stances? I think our society is in a point of maturing at now. So any argument saying that Filipinos are immature misses the entire point that we are maturing right now.
Check out political maturity,
check out our episode on political maturity for that. But yeah. Magandang dato is beardism. Beardist.
Actually, you know, he's surprising that he had a lot of votes compared. Well, is he number six? He has number six.
It's the beard.
With 259,576 votes. Followed. What can you say about that? That's a weird thing about. Yeah, among the minor candidates, he's probably up there. Yeah,
because he knows his shit. He's the only one with a grasp of the essence of this political system that you cannot do jack shit.
I thought he's the only one with a beard you can grasp.
Yeah, that one as well. But he's the only one with the grasp of the essence of the system, which is you really cannot change shit with the current system. You know, magandang benta niya.
Uh-huh. He says it a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, surprisingly, he got the album. Well, not a lot. I mean, the weird thing is that there's a lot of clear, magnetism towards Bong Bong and Loredo. Okay, so after that, there's Ernie Abelia, who is a former, like, he's also a former Lenny, GMA technocrat, yeah? Then Calliodi with 92,000.
Wait, Calliodi's only 92,000?
Why only?
Calliodi's only 92,000?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Why?
I don't know.
And of course,
it's just sad.
Actually, honestly, he is one of the. Well, he's gone to a lot of. What's the word? He's crept into a place in my heart. Actually, like he's such a cool guy. You know, like he clearly, I think even in our colleagues, people say that he has the clearest idea of what he wants in the Philippines. He may not like it, you know, but he is the most consistent candidate among all of them, and yet. 92,000 votes.
Then kasunod si ano.
Actually, Walden Bello had more votes than Calliodi, which is sad. Probably the scholar votes. We had the.
I think some people combined Lenny with Walden.
Maybe, I almost did actually, but I don't know what Walden Bello. I think it's the scholar vote. You know, like the Noam Chomsky endorsement, maybe.
The nerd vote was solid. The nerd vote was.
Yeah. I don't know. I think what Calliodi is like because he's so popular, but maybe not enough to convince the national scale, he should move a bit down. Like he ran for Senate before, like in the previous election, 2019, but he's hardly noticed. And now even a lot of people like in the are stopping him on the streets, saying trying to say hello, trying to get a selfie. So he has the growing popularity. So
I think local it's would good be... enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then again, he'd be up against what? A lot of dynasties over there in Rizal. Yeah.
And if he can join the dynasty breaking trend, it would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Dynasty and that'll be break. The first time that, well, socialists would actually have a local base.
Yeah. I think we already discussed that with Kiko during our socialism episode.
Yeah.
They need to go local. Sino ba nanalo sa inyo? Kanyake, Olivares pa rin.
And it was dangerously close was Zaide, who was from the Bagong Lipunan slate.
Dangerously close?
Yeah. Well, let me check. But, well.
So, Olivares ba explicitly for Lenny or meron siyang...
PTP laban. So, I think it's more Duterte.
Duterte. Tangina. See, you can see the splits in the damn thing.
Yeah,
the Marcos Duterte block is not as solid as people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the local elections may show that.
Yeah. And I think more of PDP Laban or Duterte people won. And the fact that they're fighting each other over it. Anyway, so... Okay. Well, not so close. But again, it's sizable. Like, Eric Olivares got 174,816 and Jun Zaide 64,000. But that's still a big number for a KBL, like which was reactivated quite recently.
KBL?
KBL! Yes.
That's weird. They're back.
They are back, but they're not. They didn't win.
Yeah, Marcos is not part of the KBL. Ibang party niya. Then again, as if parties matter here in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. But apparently they ran a slate in 2009 and 2010. Oh, wait. No, a party division. Wait. No, 2010. Okay.
Okay, I'm looking at results now for local elections.
Okay, well. Right, are we done with the nationals already? The presidential?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
well, we know that Sara Duterte won with just as many votes as the 31 million. That'll be a key word from now on. Followed by Kiko Pangilinan and then Tito Soto. Which, by the way, I think on the final day of analysis, they were statistically tied in the results.
Tito Soto, but I think, si Kiko?
Yeah. Well, they're almost tied anyway. But I suppose that's expected. Again, it was predicted. But I think what was... Oh, no, this was predicted at the latest one. But Manny Pacquiao is number three. over Isko.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's a surprise.
Any remark on that? Manny Pacquiao. Yeah, and Isko.
Isko's campaign imploded.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, not surprised. It imploded. Damn thing imploded. Mm. Especially with, I think it was the Easter conference that led to the downfall of Isko.
Right. That much to the point where is it a switch from Manny Pacquiao, or was he always getting those votes anyway? Because I think, he had a clear dominance in his own bailiwicks.
Mm.
3 million, you know, that's a different over like what? I think it was 3 million to. Let me check.
Check the
1 million. Wait, 1,900,000. So yeah, of Isko. Manny Pacquiao with 3.6 million, it's got 1.9 million. So that's almost double.
Mm.
And Manny, yeah. What can we explain about that? Actually, Manny Pacquiao, I think he's, of course, it's a remnant of his old popularity. Mm. I'm a bit surprised that he used to be able to unite. Like we mentioned that in the Steel Manny episode.
Mm.
But also, like, his platform, I didn't mention this though. His weaknesses is his platform, which is anti-corruption, pabahay.
Mm.
Let's see, more donations to the poor was stuck in 2004. Actually, it's 2004 politics playing out in 2022. Sir July actually called him to be a good student. You know, he's learning in the debates, but that proves that even if you've improved in the debates, have a good showing in the debates, it doesn't really translate to votes.
It's a relic of the past, really. Yeah. Pacquiao is the classic populist carved along Arab's Estrada's image. I'm looking at the Muntinlupa elections right now. I think the results are relatively consistent from the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
A landslide.
For
Biazon. Biazon got 74.26%.
Mm-hmm.
Yung
he's, who is an entrenched political family. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dynasty, you know?
Pero hindi pa yata naging mayor yung tatay niya si Pong Biasan. I can count him as a dynasty. But I think this is the first time he will be mayor. He served as
Congressman
for the longest time. So Fresnedi is now moving as...
They just switched places, actually.
Yeah, they're switching places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's relatively solid, amusing.
Before we move to the local elections, actually, a bit more about that. Let's move on to maybe the senator. Which number one is Robin Padilla. And everyone is just raving about this. You know, like 26 million, number one over a lot of people, followed by Lorne Legarda, who lost nothing after that. Mother's Day special. Check that out if you haven't already. That next is Rafi Tulfo, who ran independent mostly on his reputation as like a social media and television journalist, quote unquote, if you can call it that.
Mm.
Then Win Gachalian, Escudero, Mark Villar, Alan Peter Cayetano, Zubiri, Joel Villanueva, Ejercito, then Risa Ontiveros, the only progressive of in the Lenny slate. We made it to number 11, followed by Jingoy Estrada. So any general remarks on these senators moving up to the Senate?
Okay, I'm looking at the results right now.
Yeah.
I haven't stared at it that much. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Thank God Bina is not in.
Oh, yeah.
But Jingoy is.
You never heard of Bina, and I think he's following that trend or that example of not attending debates and less talk, less mistakes. And yet, I think that's still it's important to watch out for him because he didn't campaign and he still got that many votes. He was quite close.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but still no cigar. Followed by, it's weird. There's still some people who ran with the unit team but did not come in. You have Herbert Bautista who ran with the unit team. Got 14. And then you have, let's see, Harry Roque, who was this former spokesperson.
Yeah.
Thank God, you know, he didn't get in. But he still got more votes than Chael Diokno by 2 million.
Chael
Diokno is number 2.
Chael Diokno got 9 million votes.
9 million, which is impressive, but
Lenny got how many votes? Lenny
14
got
million.
14. So where the hell is 5 million?
That's what Sir Ton said, actually.
Yeah, and I'm repeating it. Where's the 5 million?
That's weird. Maybe a lot of that one can argue that perhaps people who voted for Lenny were not necessarily from her slate. That could be the cap. Well, that could be the cap. There are people who voted for her slate at 9 million. That's her solid base. The others could be from other factions. You can't really tell.
That's just weird.
That's the same thing. It's around the same with Antonio Tulanis at 8 million. Yeah,
that's the name, 5 million. That's the thing. We should not look at Lenny's camp as a coherent whole.
Yeah.
It's not a coherent whole. And the senatorial election results shows that it's not. There are gaps and awful ones at this point.
I mean, another person is Luke Espiritu, who, by the way, is impressive. A hard socialist who is known for talking of Larry Gadon, but it's still with 3 million votes. Impressive for his first time running, but still didn't get the win.
Actually,
it's way down. That's funny. Gadon didn't win either, you know, but that's probably because he has already been suspended despite being endorsed by... Was he endorsed by Sara? I don't know. Yeah. I can't find his name.
Gadon has ni Chel Jokto. What the...
Well, that means there are gaps in the unit team as well.
there are gaps.
But you have older names such as Cheese Escudero, Win Gatchalian, Alan Peter Cayetano, which I think...
Independent.
Well, they have their own followings. So independent of their slates. So that's something to consider. Like, unit team was effective in putting Bombong and Sara in, but not so much in their senatorial state. So both, well, a bit stronger maybe, but not as both teams, main teams, could not bring their Senate.
Yeah.
But why did Risa win? She's the only one in a way who got
again,
in.
Old name would be there, recognizable. The notion of incumbency advantage can be defined strictly as re-election, or it can be defined more broadly as name recognition.
Right.
So she also enjoys an incumbency, to an extent, relative incumbency advantage by, you know, having name recall.
Right.
Villar as well enjoyed the name recall of, again, the Villars.
And the memes. I think the memes helped.
The memes were supposed to bring him down, damn it.
But no, I think they endeared people even more. Like, oh, he built the Attack on Titan Wall Maria or the Great Wall of China. What? Yeah.
I contributed to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mark Villar. But that's impressive, I suppose. Maybe it's also a combination of his mom's machinery.
Yeah. I think this is machinery win. Mark Villar's one is machinery plus name recall.
Yeah. As he also served as DPWH secretary.
Yeah.
You know, building.
Herbert Bautista could not jump from local to Senate. Too bad.
Actually, one interesting thing is that you can notice that JB Hercito and Jingo Estrada, before Risa came in, makatabi lang din sila. But, lamang ng konti si JB Hercito with 15 million and then Jingo Estrada 40 million. So that would be like in Family Feud, you know, like, sino di bumoto sa akin?
Again, JB Hercito is relatively more clean. It's cleaner record than...
So that's what happens when you're cleaner. You know, you got 1 million votes different.
Yeah, yun lang. Again, you know, that's just very sad. But I need to laugh at it. But it just...
Is convicted, yeah.
Filipinos can excuse corruption. That's the worst aspect of our politics, the capacity to excuse corruption. This we are not jaded enough not to vote. But we are jaded enough to excuse anything.
Oh my God. I just found Larry Gadon. It's like almost creeping over Chel Diokno. My goodness.
That sounds
almost
dirty.
As much. Yeah. I mean, oh my God, he's famous for calling everyone Bobo, which I think responds to a lot of like Filipino culture. Filipinos love to call each other Bobo. And to have a lawyer say that out loud, kind of, nakakatawa.
Si Francis Leo Marcos, 4 million ang puteng.
Sino?
Francis Leo Marcos.
Sino yun?
I have no fucking idea. But he's poor. Yeah, independent. Yung ano, yung, ito yung, ito yata yung lintik na, ano, na may kaso, scam, scammer, yung ginito.
Yeah.
Four million.
Wait, this is curious. I just noticed, Carl Balita had 3,700,000 votes, which is more votes than his president. If I'm not mistaken. Isko Moreno. He's part of Isko Moreno's slate.
Ah.
So that's another discrepancy.
The thing is, there's more wiggling room for mix and match in the Senate list.
Yes.
There's not much room for mix and match in the presidential and vice president slate. So unavoidable. So Carbalita probably benefited from the mix and match tendency of Filipinos.
Yeah. Although I think he also had the social media presence, so that's all that also helped regardless. But he was always there right behind Isko. So
ano ba may social media presence mo si Isko?
And Willie Ong, but that's weird. It's like Willie Ong and not a lot of his followers translated the votes. I think he had millions, but now he barely had a million. Wait, let's see. How many votes did he have? Gosh, this is going to be a raw.
I think Willie Ong's results reflects the results of his election reflects the limitations of social media.
Right.
There's no immediate translation of social media activity into actual politics. Let us keep that in mind for our listeners. Do not overestimate social media, but social media can have is a multiplier effect. In terms of it being a subject for discussions outside of it.
Right.
So if you do something in social media that can catch the attention of your local Marites, that's the impact of social media as a multiplier.
Well, that's true. Or if you campaign a bit better, like everyone loves Political Will, why don't we call himself Political Willy?
Next time.
Okay.
8 million votes. No, I think you know the those who ran for Senate now. Just a brain fart. The best thing that they can do for the next elections is for all of them to compete at the local elections. All of them.
Right. All of them.
Yes. They should not gun for the Senate anymore. They should just stop and start local. Chel Jokno running at the local level. Teddy Bagilat running. Teddy Bagilat is former local politician, right?
Yeah. Probably should stay there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They should just run and create a large network of local governments.
Which is, I think, what... I don't know. I think, that, in a way, that's how Duterte's network started a bit.
Yeah, to an extent. That's also the basis of Binay's network. Sister cities. Pero, yeah, the opposition who ran for Senate right now, earlier, and... They should just run at the local level next time.
Well, we will have our midterm elections on...
after 3 years, 2025.
So a lot of time for them to, again, build their reputations, again, rebuild. I think, to be honest, even the losers in this elections, it can still be a basis again for running again. I mean, Chel Diokno got a lot more votes. Well, let me check. Chel Diokno...
Then Laila De Lima.
Then Laila De Lima. Okay. I mean, she's in jail, but I think... Well, maybe that's the floor of the LP, you know, despite her not being able to campaign personally, he's usually in a cutout. She still managed to get, is that right? 7 million? Is that right?
Laila De Lima, 7 million. 7,224,000.
Right.
But I think they should run for local offices.
I mean, it's more tangible results in their governance and executive decision making. So, yeah. Wait, let's see. Chel Diokno.
Kasi yun naman ang hinahanap ng mga Pilipino, something tangible.
Resulta.
And they can anchor on that. But they need to sacrifice the national run. If they can sacrifice the national run, which I think at this point is strategic because they should act not, you know, midterm or they should act in a strategic way. You know, just looking forward for a post-Marcos regime.
Okay. I'm checking the 2019 senatorial results where Chel Diokno first ran as senator. He has 6 million votes. So he got 2 million more votes since last time. And that's not a lot. That's, well, again, he retained 6 million and 2 million more, but yeah. And Willie Ong, well, anyway, that's why he got chosen. He ran for Senate as well. 7.6 million in 2019. So impressive, but...
But I think it's more challenging to run at the local level. It's a greater challenge.
Yeah.
But I think it must be done.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to.
And it is a scarier set because I think people have mentioned this before, Risa Ontiveros is the only progressive in there. And you still have, well, Bongo is still senator, Bato yeah. de la Rosa is still senator. So, you know, they're still filled with the vipers in there.
Still filled with weirdos.
Yeah, weirdos. I don't know. I mean, people don't get, I mean, they don't like Win Gatchalian. And but I think he's still there's still wiggle room for him to be for reform and progressive causes. I think he's you can call that the swinger. Mm. But, yeah, swinger.
Swing Gatchalian.
Swing Gatchalian.
You need him to say. Yeah.
Well,
told the line.
Again, his programs produce results, right? Like with Testaman, wasn't was Chabing Testaman?
Yeah.
Testaman. Win Gat. No, it's Joel Villanueva. Oops.
Sorry. Wait. Yeah. Sorry. What the hell did he... Mayor Valenzuela. Mayor mm-hmm. Valenzuela 20 until 2013. But mm-hmm. saan siya Valenzuela galing? And what else? Yeah, Valenzuela lang. Yeah. He's local.
Yeah.
He's a local entity. Kaya nga dapat mo, you need to go to local first.
Mm.
Kasi may, ano na, may... First and foremost... The I mean the witness, you know, you can only take advantage of the ang tawag sa ginagawa, saksi, witness, ano mean? Papa, ano mean? Papa katotoo.
Uh-huh.
Yung ano, yung itong ginawa nito sa lugar na to, you can only mm-hmm. take advantage of that one if you actually held public office.
Right. Which is, well, it didn't work for Isko right now, but, you know, that's what a lot of people hinged on. And what by Duterte hinged on.
If Isko ran on, again, his wrong timing. Mm-hmm. If Isko ran either Senate now, mm-hmm. or if he ran as
a vice president,
a vice president, or if he ran as a president on 2028, he would have won.
Actually, that would be interesting if he ran as Lenny's vice president, don't you think?
That would have been intolerable to liberals. On one hand, that would have been intolerable to liberals, but that is risky because I don't know if it. I cannot foresee if it would pay off. Kasi Isko may end up being identified as a Dilawan or Lenny may lose the counting votes.
I don't know how much of a stretch is that because he has been with like ERAP and
yeah
so I don't know he's a Dilawan. But it's a stretch, but at the same time, again, it's still important to have your vice president to actually be somewhat closer to the other side. Like in the United States, you had John McCain running with Sarah Palin because she was younger and she was female. You'd have Obama again running with
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden, who is a bit more old, traditional, traditional and old like McCain. In other words, it's a version of their opponent. So yeah,
and Kamala Harris as the Latina, right?
Is she Latina?
Indian? I don't know.
Kamala. Harris, she is colored and she's a woman. So I don't know. I mean, no, I think that's one of the few times where it was meant to show a message, you know, about diversity. Yeah. So, but it's clear in the elections of Obama, you know.
You know what, I would like to look at the French elections right now. I haven't looked at the numbers yet.
We're in the Philippines. Okay.
Yeah. Again, the French are
closer together. We should have a slice about the French elections.
Just slice of France.
Slice of France. Slice of fromage.
Slice of French cheese. Again, if you want to compare the Philippines with a non-Asian country, I think France would be the closest.
Mm-hmm. But I think we do need a mechanism that we don't have here, and that is the runoff elections, where in first round, all candidates are in. But the second round only goes to the top two, where the top two will run. And at least the other candidates will have a choice who they would support, endorse to vote for this candidate. Like a lot of the times, you know, Zemmour, who is Mr. Bean slash Mr. Bean, no, Mr. Burns and Gargamel, who is also a scary far right candidate, supported Marine Le Pen, you know. So that's an interesting development. At least there is continuity and among the political ideologies. It's reinforcing each other.
I'm looking at the endorsements.
Yeah.
So Mélenchon endorsed against Le Pen.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't endorse. He went against Le Pen, so he didn't endorse Macron.
Not explicitly.
No endorsement from the commies, I think.
No. He's too much in the center.
No, no, the communists. The communists also went against Le Pen. So
I think that they're trying to maintain their ideological consistency by going against something that's against their ideology, but not explicitly like endorsing Macron, who is again a centrist, and who actually might have more in common with Iskop.
But this was a close race.
It was a close race.
58.6% against 41.4%.
I wish it would have liked that though, but because the French, well, whoever won that election still has a very energized opposite side, you know, that hates your guts.
So you know, it's a polarized
French electorate.
I think as long as Marine Le Pen would keep on running, Macron would keep on winning.
Mm-hmm.
I think who was the last president with the third term? Was it Mitterrand? I think he was the last one with the third term. But as long as Le Pen is running, Macron would keep on winning.
I'm trying to remember if they had a rule, a cap, a term cap.
Well, I don't think they have the cap. They only have 5 years, 5 years. But they have a tradition of resigning whenever France is full of protesters. Okay.
Anyway, close race. Speaking of endorsements, there's an interesting thing because, again, there's a relationship between the national and local campaigns wherein a lot of local officials endorse some national candidates in order to have, like, maybe consolidate power and consolidated message. And quite a few actually had interesting results, but technically, if you compare the two main candidates, which is in a way a rematch from 2016, you know, the vice presidential elections, Bombom Marcos and Lenny Robredo, it's an interesting thing to compare because if you look at the way people voted right now, a lot of people switched to BBM. All right, so let's look at this article that compiles the local officials a local province that lost.
But there are also some local officials who endorsed Lenny, even if they are under PDP Laban. Which again, as I've said, if an explicit endorsement from Duterte actually came in, that would have swung many votes.
Okay, there is a vote-rich province flipped from Marcos in Batangas, where Marcos got 46.35%, while Roberto got 42%, despite Vilma Santos. Anyway, having lunch with Lenny. And Lenny lost support in Tarlac, where Marcos led by 135,000, which, again, Tarlac is an Aquino stronghold. So that's interesting.
So the Aquino stronghold didn't stand.
Mm-hmm.
So the Aquinos is the Aquinos as a political force dead?
Probably. I mean, again, the most prominent Aquino right now is Bam Aquino, who is mainly focused as a campaign manager. We can talk about that another time. But then she lost support in Samar, where Marcos led by 155,856 votes. Bacolod City is the only area in Western Visayas that flipped for Marcos in 2022, but in a close fight. So, it flipped in a lot of places. Roberto won by a landslide in Sorsogon in the 2016. Jesus, there. Okay. So, a lot flipped for Marcos. Any thoughts on that?
Well, they wanted it. The thing is, did they vote for Lenny before? They voted for Lenny, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think they also voted for Duterte.
Oh, that's right. There are a lot of people who let Lenny... who let Lenny in their slate. Because again, Duterte did not have a running. Well, the running mate he had was Cayetano, but a lot of Duterte's voters didn't like Cayetano. So a lot of them voted for other people. So it's interesting. Yeah.
They wanted it.
What can you say about Duterte's lack? I mean, the weird thing is that while Duterte never explicitly endorsed anyone, a lot of his people went separate ways. Like you have some of the Duterte movements and groups supporting Lenny. You have people like Moka Uson going with Isko.
Yeah.
So what do you think about that? What went on there?
I think Duterte just, it's most explicit. Duterte allowed things to happen. Mm-hmm. On one hand, and I think that is his way of securing or hedging his bets by not endorsing anyone. But again, he attacked Bongbong explicitly.
Okay.
I have no idea how that damn thing didn't gain traction.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it didn't gain traction because those people who voted for Duterte wanted BBM more, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Duterte himself ran under the shadow of Ferdinand Marcos.
Mm-hmm.
So, even if this block, this Duterte Marcos block, is not solid, they are still bound together by the shadow of
mm-hmm.
Apo Marcos.
Mm.
So I think that explains why his attacks on BBM didn't gain traction that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it did, I think, for some. But it mm-hmm. didn't gain that much.
Very few, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are some Duterte supporters who don't like don't like Bongbong. You know, they don't see the Ferdinand Marcos in him. You know, but that's not enough people to balance it out. So
yeah, not enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that shows that there are, you know, there's a gray area. Even if we say that Philippine politics right now is polarized among citizens, mm-hmm. there's still spaces of, you know, due to the lack of political parties, thank God. Mm-hmm. You know, if we had strong political parties, this polarization would have been far more worse.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that. But since we don't have strong political parties and we still have this, you know, more flexible approach to voting, there's mm-hmm. still much space to build a third way
mm-hmm.
or a fourth way that can gain prominence through time. Mm-hmm. So, right. So yes. So whenever I say that we are polarized, it's qualified by the fact that it's not as worse.
Mm-hmm. It could be much, much worse.
Yeah. If we have strong parties, this would have been much, much worse.
Uh-huh.
Because if we have strong parties, you would expect paramilitary entities roaming around at this point.
Really? Where is that an example?
Fascist party in Italy. They have solid organization, and if they have solid organization, they can afford to conduct partisan paramilitary forces.
Oh.
So, buti na lang, wala tayong strong parties, because if we do have strong, well-organized parties, this polarization would have been far worse.
Right.
They would have been hunting kakampings right now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Actually, there are quite a few reports of some kakamping or Lenin supporters being bullied. Like some parents disowning their children, some people like feeling vindicated and starting to tease and intimidate said like Lenin supporters, kicking them while they're down. So perhaps maybe a word about how we can move forward. I mean, again, it's a weird thing. There are still some of the arguments are still ongoing between the both camps. Tapos na. So any word on the post-electoral conduct with regards to supporters of each camp? You know, mostly Lenny and De Bongbong, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that is my source of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not invested in any of the candidates. I don't care if they win or mm-hmm. lose. And I expected this one to happen. What I didn't expect is, you know, the sustenance of aggression among citizens.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's what I didn't expect. Mm-hmm. I didn't foresee that. But sadly, that is the case. You have people gloating mm-hmm. and you have people closing doors.
Mm-hmm.
There's a possibility of a breakdown of civic relations. I'm not saying that there's a breakdown now, because mm-hmm. what we are observing is only at social media.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it has multiplier effect. So there's still a chance, you know, there's still a chance to reverse this trend of
mm-hmm.
reverse this trend of tribalism.
All right.
But I don't think many people are taking the right path towards mm-hmm. it. And I don't think they want to.
Mm-mm.
Deep inside, they want to kill the other camp.
Mm-hmm.
But since they can't, they only pour their aggression on other things.
Right. Gosh. And that's at the very least.
Go ba, what did you hear? Ikaw na pumunta sa Thanksgiving thing ni Lenny kahapon yata, di ba?
Yeah, that's that is another thing that we can switch towards, and that is like May 13th.
What's the general feeling towards the winning camp? Have you heard anything?
This is going to be raw, so you can hear me like loading. No, obviously a lot of people were you know, on the verge of breakdown, on the verge of, you know, in tears, and some people have broke down multiple times since. And so, of course, a huge crowd in my alma mater of Ateneo actually appeared just to see what would Lenny say. And the weird thing is that, you know, they were holding back tears. It's clear as well. But it was important for them to, at the very least, harvest, salvage what was remaining, which is a lot of the energy that has been gathered. Because I've actually been to quite a few Lenny events, you know, might as well let the cat out the belt. Yeah, I'm in there. I'm in Pasig and Makati, and it's a great feeling to be in there. You know, there are people who believe in the same thing, is just happy to be there. They're enjoying and focused on a singular message. You forget about Bardagulan, you forget about the debates. You just have, in a way, have fun. Most people call it like just a concert, and perhaps you can call that. Maybe some people just wore pink from the other camps just to enjoy a concert by Ben and Ben and Regine Velasquez. He had a lot of celebrities in there, but in voting day, it's different, you know. But again, of course, during that time, they announced the establishment of the Angat Buhay NGO, which again, people were expecting more like a concession, expecting to break down right there in Ateneo. But instead, she salvaged and spared a lot of people from breakdown. And then said that, walang nasayang. That's a beautiful thing. One of the things that stuck with me. Walang nasayang. Hindi tayo nabigo. Yeah. So at the very least, it's going to move into NGO. But again, I think we can talk about this in another episode. Mm. But for now, our first impressions of it, quite frankly, it has a lot of... it retains a lot of the Office of the Vice President projects. It manages to build infrastructure like schools and dormitory and housing, you know, regardless of like Duterte, you know, and the Duterte administration. It was able to help a lot of people during calamities. So it's impressive. It has an impressive volunteer network. So of course she's retaining that. But at the same time, at best, it could be like a para welfare state, which if the government doesn't work, you know, one provides like a mother state. You know, if you expect Bongbong state to be like a fatherly, masculine, disciplinarian state, this is a mother state here, being welfare, grant feeding the poor and the hungry and the laylayan. But of course, at worst, we already have similar movements. I would compare it to maybe what it looks like, another Red Cross. Again, it's Filipino flavored, you know, it's ground up. And the Red Cross has managed to do a lot. It manages to provide a lot of testing, a lot of, course, evacuation during calamities. Similar zeal for volunteerism, but again, would it be like a Pink Cross? You know. So what do you think? What is the potential of this Angat Buhay NGO?
Yeah, I think they can easily cooperate with Red Cross and Caritas.
All right. I mean, Dick Gordon was part of the slate
Dick
for
Gordon
a time.
Dick Gordon was part of the slate. Lenny has... the ears of the Catholic Church, so Caritas can easily jump in.
Right.
I cannot say much right now. But yeah, it's just a good way to salvage what's left of the civic energies spent on this campaign. Kasi ano to, labasan ng it's expenditure of civic energies, first and foremost.
Right.
And can we expect ordinary Filipinos to be active in politics or in civic affairs? Yeah, probably, since there's now they can redirect their energies towards this. Will this promote or will this alleviate existing trends on mass inaction? That's something that we have yet to see. Will this help the opposition for the next elections? I think it should not matter for them now. Because if they start making it matter, Filipinos don't like to mix welfare with politics unless it's election time.
Yeah.
It's election time.
I mean, that's the weird thing. People, well, she explicitly said that hindi siya pipili. Now, she will not choose who to help. Basta pa kailangan ka ng tulong,
tutulungan ka. That's fair.
But there are already BBM partisans are saying they are planning to exclude 31 million people. I'm like, that's literally the opposite of what they said.
Ang sabi nga lang eh. Angat ba kayo?
Anyway.
Di ba kayo nakikinig? Again, that's the level of distrust.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level of distrust that they, you know, that's the problem. When there's distrust among citizens, it's difficult to rebuild. Who will go first? Who will extend the hand to rebuild trust?
Right. You know, that's the thing. One can say that, of course, this is even during the pandemic. Like, they didn't like her efforts as vice president because she's upstaging the government. In fact, they even called her and like Vico Soto for a meeting because, again, she was outperforming the government. And with this kind of similar, like she's retaining the templates of OVP, she will be challenging the government in providing these basic welfare services. So it could be a threat to, it could be a threat of legitimacy. Or if, again, I'm not sure if I mentioned this in our conversation, but if BBM, if Marcos is smart and ruthless, you know, he would be able to block the accreditation, the NGO status, every step of the way, you know, could even freeze accounts. So the fact that she's announcing it in this manner might salvage it, but it'll be knowing, again, the opposite, like the other side of what she's doing and how they might deal with it. So it is scary. The government still needs to approve NGOs.
Yeah,
there's still the possibility of violence.
Yeah, that's why I said that I could not comment on it that much. All I have are questions right now.
Yeah,
because we will see. We will see what happens, and who knows? Mm-hmm. She may get support from foreign aid institutions.
Yeah,
and if she gets support from them, you know, the government will have no choice but to credit them.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it is to an extent this is the thing. She is taking the government to a battlefield that she knows, which is NGO work. And I think this is a smart move for her.
Mm-hmm.
This is her expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And she's taking the fight there.
Mm-hmm.
The government can choose to go and build their own welfare movement. They can.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can repress, or they can ignore.
Mm-hmm.
But she's taking the fight to where she is good at.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, kudos to her. I think that this move is, it's dangerous, yes, but the risk is calculated.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what she's doing.
Right.
And kumail silang education for tao, pwede tayo mag-volunteer.
Yeah, I'm at buhay education.
But I will not let them dictate our modules. Fuck them. we will teach nonpartisan citizenship.
I mean that leads to like another possibility. Again, maybe we can comment briefly, you know, but there's another thing that, of course, one of the first early appointments of the Bongbong administration's cabinet is Vice President Sara Duterte. Vice President elect is going to be in the Department of Education. Thoughts on this?
If she focuses on bureaucratic reform and cutting back red tape in DepEd, I would applaud her.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is what is needed, and that's the only thing I can trust her with.
Mm-hmm.
But if she starts tampering with content, no.
Of course.
But if she fixes the bureaucratic shit of DepEd and allows the relatively freer flow of resources to our schools, and if she makes that her priority, that would be great.
Yeah. Actually, that's an interesting point. You know, people are usually like decrying or cursing that development, but that is that's an interesting reason to welcome it. But at the same time, DepEd isn't exactly a place where to gain political capital. I mean, if she has plans of being president, the better place would be a DILG, the Department of Interior and Local Government. Weird thing is that Maro has had it. He couldn't win.
It's a dipshit. What can you expect?
Yeah,
he's the man that you give an opportunity and throws it away.
Yeah, and she explicitly wanted Department of National Defense.
Yeah,
DND, and yet he didn't give it to her. So it's either a test, or she's trying to limit her influence, like deliberately and in plain sight. So it could be a
Her spokesperson actually responded that she still wants D&D. Mm-hmm. So it's not a complete agreement.
Yes. It could be a fracturing, early fracturing of this. That's nice. It could be staged, saying, giving us a false sense of, let's see, hope. But yeah.
Autocrats would always like to appear united.
Okay.
I don't think they will stage something that can hint a fracture, especially since unity is their slogan.
Mm-hmm. And yet, take note that there are some people who think that while Sara Duterte is formidable and popular, especially in Mindanao and Visayas, she may not have the numbers compared to the presidential bandwagon. The presidential bandwagon, that's a weird thing. It can go to either way. You can choose to either go to, most people go to the president's party.
Mm.
But would Sara's faction go to it? That is the question. Or would they remain Sara's faction?
Who knows? Maybe masira ang presidential bandwagon tradition yan.
Mm-hmm.
Under the illusion that they are under a single party anyway, but they're maybe fractures about that.
Yeah.
Again, Duterte is crucial. The old Duterte is crucial here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he will do next.
That's it. These are things we should watch out for, as well as, and I think I forgot to mention this before we go, 595 precincts gave 0 votes to Robredo, while 75 precincts got 0 votes for Marcos. Now, is there a possibility of it being like the FPJ or the GMA? Because remember, Fernando Poe Jr. had 0 votes in several areas during the 2004 elections, and people, because of the Hello Garci scandal, where GMA allegedly or like actually was discovered been caught talking to an electoral official. So could this be a GMA influence, or is it just tit for tat electoral dominance?
First and foremost, I don't know. I don't want to start speculating on it.
Okay.
Because I don't know.
Okay.
Second, does it matter? There's a high voter turnout. Again, this entire shit is legitimate.
Okay.
Yun na lang yung masasabi ko. But regarding the FPJ case, again, that worked because the gap is not as big as this.
I see.
Yun ang masasabi ko with the Hello Garci scandal. It worked because the gap is not as big as this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's not good to compare both.
Right.
So that is it. But yeah, essentially, I cannot say anything because I don't want to speculate. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. And second, this entire thing is really legitimate. I have yet to get the voter turnout numbers, but I think it's high. But not as high as 2016, I think. But pero ang dami, daming lumabas eh. So I think ang tumaas dito is not the voter turnout per se, but what increase would be turnout in relation to the voting age population. So, feel ko yun ang tumaas.
Well, there are many questions that we have yet answered, but at the very least, we tried to uncover them, list them down. A lot of interesting patterns and developments that are worth into going into it. This is a raw, so it's just our way of like, again, laying them out. Yeah.
Process these things. Like going inside a house. It's a new house that you have bought.
Yeah.
No,
Any final words of our, like, on these elections?
Again, it's time to refocus on citizens first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to focus on political psychology. That's why people are having a hard time understanding this landslide. Because they don't have a grasp of inherent political values and attitudes that are in place.
Yeah.
That have allowed this landslide to happen. Because if they know our basic political psychology, they will not be surprised. So I think it's time for us to shift our attention away, you know, from the usual electoral patterns, bandwagon, and yada, yada, yada. Go back to the values. Kasi nagsilabasan na lahat. Ito na, nandito na. It's just a matter of identifying the damn thing.
Yeah.
Got any last words? Tapos na ba ang grief process?
I don't know. Like, of course, I'm not as devastated as many people are because, again, in a way, because the surveys were there to brief and maybe help us anticipate such a remark. And in a way, the survey is also predicted Duterte. That's a weird thing. Science still remains. That's the odd thing. You know, social science still remains. But again, I agree with you in that it should refocus towards values next, not just voting behaviors and patterns. I do think that, number one, history, the teaching of history and the content of history, in a way, is the most ravaged and the most contentious thing right now we have to also reflect on. Of course, people have been banging on facts, but again, at the heart of the writing of history is the affirmation of common values. And right now, the other people, other people are saying that, no, it's about facts. No, it's because it focused on a certain value and excluded the values of a lot of other people. That's why now they're having their revenge. So the history, in a way, going back to what we talked about with Mike Dabuyan's episode, it needs to accommodate both, like, all these things, all these multiple voices, because there is an illusion then that there's only one version of history, or this is the right thing, that's the right thing. But again, I think, to put it in Jungian terms, I think instead of rejecting the shadow, because the shadow in a way becomes stronger the more you reject it and fight it, you simply have to incorporate and accept that part of our country and deal with it openly rather than try to repress it. So these authoritarian tendencies, these in terms of like people suspicious of international influence, you know, international news, even democratic ideals and human rights, we have to deal with them. You can't simply ignore them, or we can't simply label them as uneducated. It is something we have to contend with respect and also with seriousness. And in a way, if we're unable to do that, then we actually don't understand human rights, democracy, liberalism ourselves. That's what John Stuart Mill says. If we only know how to accommodate our own side, we don't know the thing at all, the issue at all, the question. We have to be able to articulate as many sides as possible, even particularly the ones of your opponent. In fact, again, I've said this multiple times, Thomas Aquinas was able to articulate the opposite sides and then even debate that and tear them down through steel manning. So yeah, I think we should learn to understand the other side rather than shame, block, unfriend, and kick out of our household or disowning our families and friends. Or burning bridges. Never burn bridges. We should, again, rebuild the nation and make the civil discourse revive civil discourse, or even establish it if it never existed, that is able to accommodate and, process opposing ideas properly.
Yeah. But then again, burning bridges is cheaper. That is the great challenge right now. It is mentally cheaper to burn bridges.
Right.
So that's why I said that the post-Marcos regime will be built in the next few years. And it would be built on what citizens would do next. Will they burn bridges? If they start burning bridges, if they could not find a common ground that goes beyond political parties, individual politicians, and whatnot,
right,
then this cycle will continue. And we would be, our lives may be long, and we would see this cycle go again. And we would be the old people next time saying that, it happens again. So, Uncle, if they want to continue the cycle, yeah, fine. Go ahead. Burn bridges. Close doors. It's cheaper to your sense of peace. Because the sacrifice is basically talking to the opposite side, even if you detest them.
I mean, the point is, like, in a way of this podcast, is that you and I have very different views on things, and yet we're here talking and trying to hash them out and trying to understand and talk about them, you know?
Because there are values that are greater than our debates. We agree on common values.
And in a way, our country needs to as well.
Needs to as well.
We can't do that. We can't sell those values or negotiate those values if we burn bridges.
Yep. Onga. How the hell can you talk to people if you start burning bridges?
Yeah.
Anyway, this is just amusing.
Yeah. So in a way, we empathize with all those who are downtrodden, and we congratulate those who feel like this is a victory. And you know, but at the same time, there's we will keep on making content. We will keep on asking and answering questions and talking to more people, even on the opposite sides of the fence. This is what the PI podcast stands for, and we will continue that regardless of who is president, or you know, and perhaps even
in the
service
overlord
of the country, you know. Regardless of who is the president or vice president or whatever, we'll still serve the country. You know, we would applaud them when necessary, and we would criticize them when necessary. So yeah. Anyway, that's it for this raw edition of the post elections analysis. If you have more ideas or more questions, suggestions, comments, you may send us an email at pipodcastph@gmail.com, or you may send us a message in our Facebook page, or you may find us at Spotify, Anchor, and YouTube. And yeah, Spotify, yeah, they say that, yeah. But until the next episode,
magandang gabi, mga PI.